You are listening to End of Life University Podcast, real talk about life and death. This is episode number 126. End of Life University Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator. In this podcast, I share thoughtful conversations with experts in various fields related to dying and death, and informative teaching sessions on preparing for the end of life by living fully today. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I'm glad you're here. Today, I'll be sharing with you an interview with Kelvin Chin, an attorney who has written a book called Overcoming the Fear of Death. And we're going to be talking all about the fear of death and how to understand it and also how to rise above it. And so I think you'll find this a very interesting interview. I have an announcement. Once again, I'll remind you about the reading group that I have started called A Year of Reading Dangerously. It's for the entire year of 2018. We're reading one book each month. And so far, I have just over 700 people who've signed up to be part of the group, which is amazing to me and really fun. This month, for the month of January 2018, we're reading the book When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi. We'll be having online written discussions on our Facebook page and our Facebook group, but at the end of each month, we will also have a live conference call discussion about each group that people can participate in. So if you're interested, you can go to the eoluniversity.com website, and on the home page, there's a link you can click to learn more about the reading group if you'd like to join. There's no cost, no obligation whatsoever. Once you sign up, you'll just get an email each month that tells you about the book and also include a downloadable reader's discussion guide for each book, and you'll be able to find out when we're having our discussion if you'd like to take part in it. So just go to eoluniversity.com and you'll find a link there to learn more and sign up for A Year of Reading Dangerously. You can also find out about that on the show notes, the podcast show notes at eolupodcast.com too, if you're interested in just coming to the webpage for this episode. Remember that this podcast is sponsored by generous donations made through my page at patreon.com/EOLU. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. These contributions help defray some of the expenses of creating, producing, and broadcasting this podcast and the End of Life University interview series. In addition, when you make a pledge of even $1 per month, it lets me know that you enjoy and benefit from this work I'm doing, and that emotional and spiritual support helps keep me going week after week. So I want to thank all of my current supporters who are making monthly contributions to help keep this show on the air. I'm so, so grateful for your support. And if you're interested in becoming a supporter, go to patreon.com/EOLU. When you do sign up, you'll begin receiving a monthly Q&A call I refer to as Hospice Happy Hour, where I answer your questions that you submit to me in a recorded form, so you can listen to that. You will also get other benefits like the top 10 interviews from End of Life University and special recordings that I will download for you. And there is a new level of support, the platinum level, $5 per month or more. And at that level, you'll receive access to all of the End of Life University interviews for 2018 with unlimited replays on those interviews. They'll be available for you right on Patreon. You'll be able to go there and listen to any interview you want at any time during the year. So thanks again, and I really appreciate all the support that I'm receiving. It makes all the difference for me. So without further ado, we will go to the interview for today with Kelvin Chin. And before we get started, I'll just remind you, Kelvin has a book called Overcoming the Fear of Death Through Four Main Belief Systems. I'll post a link for that in the show notes as well at eolupodcast.com if you're interested in getting a hold of the book. So we'll get started with the interview now, and stay tuned after the interview. I'll come back and share with you my takeaways from my talk with Kelvin Chin. Here we go. Hello, and welcome to End of Life University. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, author of the book, What Really Matters, and I'm so glad that you're here joining me again today for another interview. I really appreciate having an audience out there to listen to these conversations. And I'm delighted today to be welcoming a guest who brings in a fresh new perspective to this subject of death and dying. And I think you're really going to enjoy this interview too with Kelvin Chin. And I'd like to tell you a little bit more about Kelvin before we start our conversation. Kelvin is the executive director and founder of the Overcoming the Fear of Death Foundation. He focuses on helping people improve the quality of their lives now by overcoming their fear of death and by developing a more balanced and enjoyable life mentally, physically, emotionally by turning within through meditation. Kelvin has helped people worldwide with death and dying issues since the 1980s and has taught meditation to more than 1,000 people since the 1970s in schools, businesses, the U.S. Army, and at West Point. His nonprofit, Overcoming the Fear of Death Foundation, helps people improve their quality of life through an approach that is grounded in understanding death more clearly and aligning that understanding more accurately with each of our respective beliefs systems, whatever they may be. Kelvin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Karen. Really appreciate it.
Well, I've been excited to talk to you because you're one of the few guests I've interviewed who is not part of either the healthcare system or the funeral industry or even the kind of the alternative death industry. With your background in business and law, you really bring a unique perspective to this whole subject of death and dying, and particularly the fear of death. And so I'm really excited to hear what you have to say.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's an unusual background that I bring, and I'm sure we'll get into how I get into it and so forth. But for the most part, I spent my career in business and law, and doing this work with helping folks with death and dying, mostly as an adjunct to that kind of day job that I had.
Well, why don't you tell us how you did get interested in helping people with the fear of death?
Sure. So what happened with me is, in my third year of law school, my mom passed away, and it was very difficult for me. It was very quick. She was gone in a matter of a few short months. It was lung cancer that had already metastasized to her brain to such an extent that I remember the oncologist told us that her brain looked like raisin bread. There were so many tumors in it, and so she passed away very quickly, and it was a shock to all of us. And for me, law school is difficult enough, and then I'm going through that, and then my mom is dying, and she passed away in my third year. And I basically worked through that grieving process and that loss of my mother on my own. It was kind of the ultimate self-help process of dealing with my mom's death and dying. And as a result, I came out the other side, worked through it, and you know how you kind of walk around sometimes and people will ask you, well, how are you doing? And usually most of us, I think we just say, oh, yeah, I'm doing okay. And you just kind of don't want to get into a long, detailed discussion. Maybe you're busy and you got to get someplace. But I started telling people, I was working in a law firm at the time, part-time, and in Boston, and people would ask me at law school, so how you doing? And I'd say, you know, I'm okay, but my mom just passed away. And as soon as I said my mom passed away to people, people started opening up. You know how self-disclosure can do that for mm-hmm. people. They feel more open. You've trusted them, in a sense, with something intimate and personal, and then they just immediately start to trust you and share something with you. So people would say, oh, my grandmother just passed away. Oh, my brother just had a motorcycle accident and he passed away. All this stuff that normally people are walking around all pent up, they don't talk about it. And so I started just sharing with people in that way, and they started sharing with me, and they say, well, how did you handle it, and da-da-da-da, and that's how it started. So that was about 30 years ago, and so I did that nights and weekends throughout my 40-year corporate and legal career, and decided to do it full-time now, and so about a year ago I started this nonprofit organization here in Austin, and I've been speaking around the country, and I'm working with people around the world. It's pretty amazing what the need is.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. You know, one thing I observe through doing all the interviews I've been doing with people in all walks of life, doing all types of work, each one of us has been called in some way to do the work. And for many of us, it is because of a loss, because of the death of someone we love, that has brought us to this realization that the whole world needs help with death. Everyone needs
right.
some sort of help to get through that. And I love it that you just bring a different perspective, because you're a lay person, and so you're not hung up on
right.
medical definitions, or, you know, you're not hung up on talking about any of those details. You can simply share that human understanding of this experience of the death of someone you love, and then also facing your own death, the awareness of your own death as a result of
right.
that.
Exactly. So, you know, it was, you know, I've used that terrible life event of my mom passing away as an opportunity to get my own mind around it, because that's what helped me pull myself out of, you know, kind of the dark side, you know, just being so sad about it, et cetera, and to some extent overwhelmed, but not visibly overwhelmed. You know, there's a lot of us who are walking around, and I was one of them. I'm sure people did not realize externally how hurt and how shaken I was inside at the time, because culturally we do a really good job at masking things. And for me, what helped me get past that was increasing my understanding about death and dying, and thinking about it from that perspective, because there's plenty of people, and I'm certainly one of them as well, we all do this, where we wrap our physical arms and we wrap our mental and emotional arms around people and support them emotionally when they're going through a grieving process, whether it's about themselves, their own, you know, gradual slipping away through some illness or whatever, or whether it's the loss of a loved one, we wrap our arms around them physically and emotionally, and that's a good thing. And I call that the inspirational approach. It's kind of the supportive, knee-jerk default approach that we all have as human beings, and I think it's a good thing. But at the same time, that is, there's many, many people out there who do a great job in that supportive kind of role. And so I looked at the, you know, what was available in terms of helping me, and I thought, well, there's plenty of that. What's not available is getting a better understanding about death and dying, through regardless of what the person's belief system is. And so I started doing that many years ago, decades ago, and that's what helped pull me out of this. And so I've been applying that approach, which is I've learned, like you say, I'm a lay person. So I've learned that that's a different approach than what's normally out there. So there's kind of two facets to that. One is increasing people's understanding about death and dying to help reduce their fears about death and dying through their particular lens. So the second part is through their lens, and that second part includes the whole notion that it doesn't matter for me, it doesn't matter what their belief system is about death or religion or about God or no God, if they were atheist, it doesn't matter what the person's belief system is. I look at, help them look at the death and dying process through their lens and thereby help them reduce their fears. Because ultimately, what is it all about? It's about reducing our fears so that we can live more in the present, in the now, in the moment with our family, our friends, our loved ones who are here with us. And you know, our the people we work with, and however we're engaging with the world, it's about living more fully now. And so that's the ultimate objective of the work that I do.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Kelvin, you've written about four main belief systems around death. And so I was wondering if you'd tell us a little bit about those four systems that you see.
Sure. So, first of all, I've broken it up into four main belief systems that, regardless of what religion a person is, regardless of what culture they're from in the world, it doesn't matter. They'll hear the four belief systems and they'll see, oh, that one over there, that's the one that I fit into. They may have a whole host of other beliefs that are around it because of culture or religion or lack of organized religion. They may have their own kind of formulation from a spiritual standpoint, but they'll fit somewhere in one of these four. So these four belief systems, from a religious or a belief sense, even in and of themselves, are fairly generic. You know, they're not real specific in terms of. You'll see when I lay them out. And the other thing is that they're guidelines. They're not absolutes. It's not like, oh, these are the only four belief systems that could ever exist. I think when you'll hear them, you'll find that there may be another way of expressing a belief system that may fall into underneath one of the four that I lay out. But I'm not here to say from a dogmatic standpoint, you know, this is the way it is. These are the four belief systems. No, they are guidelines. They are a way for us to have a fairly organized discussion around death and dying. That's the purpose of why I laid them out this way. So the first belief system is the belief system that my dad had, which was when the body dies, the mind dies. So the belief system that those people have is that when the brain basically shuts off, it stops functioning, then the mind turns off. They believe that the mind is connected, the mind and the brain are one. And that's the first belief system. And the second belief system is the body dies, the mind continues. But there's a little bit of a twist here, slight coloration in the sense that the mind continues but with fear. So there's a fear that goes along with the mind after the body dies, although the mind is continuing. So the mind continues to exist. I call it the fear of continued existence, the second belief system. Mm-hmm. The third belief system is kind of a variation on the second one, but I separate the two for discussion purposes, as I said, just to kind of have a more specific and organized discussion about it. Third belief system is body dies, mind continues, and it transitions to something. We may, depending on what our culture or religious beliefs are, we may label it a certain thing, but I just call it continues. Maybe call it afterlife, whatever you want to call it, but the mind continues and it transitions, but there's no fear involved with the third belief system. And the fourth belief system is the mind continues after the body dies, and it transitions to another state, and then at some point it may decide, the mind, and by the way, when I say mind, I mean the mind, soul, spirit, consciousness, awareness. Sometimes people talk about energy or whatever. So I'm not just talking about the individual mind that's deciding what I'm speaking about right now or moving my hands and so forth. I'm talking about the fullness of the human mind. Mm-hmm. So in the fourth belief system, the mind continues, and the mind may decide to come back in another lifetime and have multiple lifetimes in that way, a future life, past lives, that idea, the idea of reincarnation. So that's the fourth belief system.
And I find that very interesting because I agree with you. Breaking it down by those four belief systems makes more sense to me, actually, than trying to explore the belief systems of any one particular religion, because I agree with you. I've seen all four of these beliefs within any religion, you know,
right.
So this makes more sense, and it gives us a little bit more of a commonality with which to look at beliefs and
yes.
to really understand what's behind each belief system, or how can you engage with people within each one of those systems to help them with their fear.
That's exactly right. That's a very good point. And that's there's a lot of underlying objectives, I guess, that I've kind of since realized just in the way I articulate and think about things. But one of them is what you just articulated, which is to try to help people look at things more from a commonality standpoint as opposed to a difference standpoint. We're also caught up in very often worldwide looking at the differences, but it's not that we don't have differences. We absolutely have differences, and I think that differences should also be embraced. But there's an amount of energy that we also need to spend on looking where's the overlap of the Venn diagram? You know, the old, is that geometry or algebra? I think it's geometry. But anyway, mathematics, you know, where the two circles overlap. Where's that commonality? You know, so my mediation background, I think that's how I'm wired. That's my kind of default wiring. Where is the commonality? You know, the other thing that I want to mention that you remind me of is with these four belief systems, there may be hybrids. You know, one person may have a hybrid. They may, and I've run into this in my speaking engagements. You know, I'll be speaking to 100 people or whatever, I'll lay out the four belief systems first before I get into a discussion of what, you know, how to reduce the fear as it relates to each of them. I'll just lay them out first, real quick, and then I'll say, okay, show of hands, how many people are in the first belief system? And it depends on the group, but, you know, if there's more than 20 people in a group, it's pretty much guaranteed there's going to be at least somebody in all of the four belief systems. And I say, how many of you, raise your hands, how many of you are not sure? And then, you know, six or eight people out of, a group will raise their hands, and you feel like you're maybe in a hybrid, and they'll laugh. And I said, that's totally okay. That's totally fine. These are not hard and fast. This is not about, quote unquote, getting it right. This is about your beliefs, and your beliefs can change over time, and they do change, and it's normal for them to change, and that's totally okay. So, sometimes people are on the fence, or they may have a mix. I'll give you an example. I was talking with somebody yesterday, contacted me from having seen my website, he said that he thought his belief system was the first belief system, the one where mind stops. Mind dies when the body dies. But he also articulated to me that he has a tremendous fear, a debilitating fear about non-existence after he dies. Well, I pointed out so part of what I do with people is help clarify what their fears are.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, clarify first what their fears are of, because a lot of people are walking around with fears that they articulate in a certain way, and they don't realize that they don't have that fear. It's a different fear. Or they may think they have 10 fears, and they really only have 2 fears. And so it's important to get clarity for several reasons. One is to kind of narrow it down. Okay, what is your fear of? And that immediately releases some pent-up energy that they're carrying around and frees them of that binding influence, so to speak, that contracting influence of the fear, because they don't really have it, but they have a different fear, And the other reason is then you can kind of figure out what is a better, is a best solution for that particular fear once you've identified what the fear is. So in his case, I pointed out to him, I said, you know, well, think about it. If you are afraid, if you have that first belief system and you're afraid of your non-existence after it and that terrifies you, that makes no logical sense because what's fear? Fear is the emotion associated with the anticipation of unhappiness. The emotion associated with the anticipation of unhappiness. Well, if you believe, like my dad did, that you're going to end when your physical body ends, your mind is going to end also, you're not going to have any experience, happiness or unhappiness, after your physical body dies, if that really is your belief system. And so that then you should be like my dad, which he was. He was not afraid of death. He just lived life as fully as he could while he was here, and that was his, that's how he lived life. That was his, based on his belief system. He understood his belief system for what it was. Now, this gentleman I spoke with yesterday, I pointed it out to him, and I said, he said, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And so we got a little bit of clarity there. And I said, but really what I hear you likely saying is that you have a little bit of fear about what may happen afterwards because you're not sure. There's an uncertainty. And I point out that to everybody, and nobody's going to know till they know. You know, we don't know for sure till we actually do die.
Exactly.
To some extent, it's conjecture, to a large extent. Even in my lectures and in my book where I talk about other people's experiences, friends, and these are all people I know, friends of mine over the years, and some of which are my experiences, but even if somebody expresses an NDE, a near-death experience to you, like several of my friends have had near-death experiences, and I've heard about them at least secondhand from them, then they that's their experience. It's not your experience. So, and even if it is your experience, that's your interpretation of that experience. So it's we won't know till we know, but my thing is, how can I help this gentleman now in the present? And so we helped clarify that with him yesterday, and he saw that in fact he had this fear that was about continuation afterwards, and then I'm helping him deal with his anxiety more on a neurophysiologic level. So both from an understanding standpoint and an experiential standpoint by turning within. So I tell people when I give lectures, it doesn't matter to me how a person turns within to try to deal with their anxieties and their fears on a neurophysiologic level, not at an intellectual level, not on a talking about it level, but on a mind-body level, through meditation, through some other technique, some other practice. For some people, prayer is very powerful. And I'm not talking, I've given lectures to fundamentalist Christian groups. I tell them, look, I'm not talking about the type of prayer where you're asking for something. I'm talking about that moment when you may be in church. And I'll ask people, how many have ever had this experience where they're in church, where their eyes are closed? Maybe you're praying, maybe you're not praying, but you're sitting there quietly, and you have a sense of self. You have a sense of your mind that's bigger than the normal mind that you're walking around with on a daily basis. Everybody has raised their hands when I asked that. I said, well, that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about turning within and connecting with ourselves, knowing thyself. You know, connecting with ourselves in that different way from the way we normally connect with ourselves in a waking, in walking around waking state. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So I love that you use that. That's the technique that you teach people in dealing with their fear, is something as simple as just going inside themselves in order to know themselves better.
Right. Exactly. So I point out to them that they're knowing themselves not better from a content-oriented standpoint. standpoint, not from an intellectual standpoint. They're knowing themselves, exploring themselves inwardly, and that will help relax them, and that will help, obviously, release their anxieties and their fears and so forth, regardless of an analysis, with no analysis of that. Now, if they want to work with a therapist, which I encourage them to do professionally, and look at it more from an analysis standpoint and kind of looking where the fear is coming from, that is different. That's a separate separate approach, and it's a valid approach, and it's a valuable approach. So I encourage people to go that route as well, but I make it clear that that's not what I'm doing with them. So my approach is more non-content oriented, turning within, and then externally oriented, increasing their understanding through their belief system about death and dying, whether it's about their own death or others. And I always point out to people, you know, it's valuable for all of us to learn about everybody else's belief system. You know, I was doing this in-service training that I had mentioned to you earlier with these 150 healthcare workers, and most of them were Christian, and they let me know that, and I said, that's fine, but understand that not all of your clients, your patients, may be Christian. You may run into a Buddhist, you may run into an atheist, you may run into a Hindu, a Sikh, or who knows what. And it's not that you need to understand all the details of their religion, but you should understand the overarching belief systems that encompass all religions, and that's how I've structured these four belief systems that I talk about. So they appreciated that as a caregiver so that they can be there for the person for whom they're caring, as a doctor, a nurse, or a home health care worker, or whatever role they have. The role is to be supportive. The role is not to be persuasive about somebody's belief system. You know, that's not the role. The role is to be there fully, and you can be there fully when you really can embrace the other person's belief system, even though you don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You're embracing it, and you understand it. And when they feel non-verbally, and to some extent maybe even verbally, that you understand where they're coming from, they open up more. They can relax more, and they can die more easily. They can let go more comfortably.
And it's interesting because you have experience offering exactly that same type of understanding with people from all over the world. Because, and I wanted you to tell our listeners a little bit more about this, because you offer these free telephone sessions, is that right, with people who contact you. So tell us a little more about what that experience has been like.
Sure. Yeah, so I offer free telephone sessions with people to help them deal with their death and dying issues. And I talk to them generally for about an hour. And what's happened is, I'll rewind a little bit. So what happened is I gave a talk in April last year at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. And it was interesting because when we set the talk up there, the only vacant spot, those of you who know what the Commonwealth Club is, Commonwealth Club has been around since 1903. There's I think 16 or 18 different groupings that you can fall into. So I fell into the humanities group. There's a political, there's a politics group, there's an economics group, there's a religious group, there's all these different groups and so forth. So under the politics group, both Clintons have spoken there, each president has spoken there. Teddy Roosevelt inaugurated the National Park System in 1903 when the Commonwealth Club opened in San Francisco in 1903. It's that kind of, it has a lot of, well, people know about it. In a lot of different sectors. Anyway, so the only available spot for me was Monday at noon if I wanted to do this anytime basically in the foreseeable future in 2015. So I did this back in April. So Monday at noon, you know, this is obviously not a great speaking spot, slot for people in the middle of the day on a Monday. But when I got there, it was standing room only. There were all 90 seats were filled, and so there must be a need. And three media outlets came.
Wow.
And I was on the and a Chinese TV station showed up, and they filmed the entire lecture, and they met with me afterwards for an hour and a half. The media did for an hour and a half in the green room afterwards, and I was on the evening news in China. There's a 2-minute spot of me on the evening news that night. But Business Insider, which is a well-known I think it's just online journal, news journal, did a big spot on me, and that spot's had I think it's more than 18,000 views so far. And as a result, that's one of the top Google searches for the words fear of death.
Hmm.
Now, so people connect with me from around the world through that. And what I found is that, interestingly, you know, I've talked with people from Lithuania, all over Europe, the Middle East, Vietnam, India, China, Japan, you name Australia, et cetera, all over the world. And what's interesting is how common this fear of death is, regardless of culture, regardless of religion, regardless of the belief system. It does not matter. There's a common fear of death and fear of the dying process, et cetera, that is worldwide. And the other interesting thing about it is that it's age agnostic. In other words, it's across all age groups. I have 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 20-year-olds. And, of course, the first thing I say to the 15 and the 17-year-olds is you talk to your parents about this. And some of them, in some cultures, they feel that for various reasons, they won't talk to their parents, no matter how much encouragement I give them. So it's really interesting how this has developed. And you know, eventually I'll get them to talk to their parents, and things will start. They'll start getting a local support system, et cetera, of course, which is what many of them need. But so many of them are closed up emotionally and for various reasons, also culturally and to some extent religiously in some places in the world. But I found that it really cuts across all religions, all cultures. It doesn't matter. People share this common fear.
Hmm. It's so fascinating that you have that perspective just by virtue of people from all over the world opening up to you and coming to you. And you really play the role of an understanding listener. It doesn't sound like you're not giving people advice. You're not telling them what to do about it or how to fix it. You're simply listening and sharing this human condition of being mortal and knowing that we will die and the fear that arises within us because of that.
Well, I'm doing that. And then I listen. I always ask them, okay, first of all, before I get into any discussion with you, I always ask them, tell me about what your beliefs are about death and dying. And then very often they will have started as a child with certain belief systems, and then maybe as a teenager it changes, and maybe they're 20 and 23 years old, and then it changes again. So very often they go through several stages of an evolution, so to speak, of their own belief system about death and dying, their own belief system about the universe and God and religion and so forth. And so I listen to that, I hear that, and then I frame my comments based on what they have told me through that lens so that it speaks to them. And then I frame the understanding then based on their belief system. For example, another person I spoke with yesterday said, well, you know, I'm thinking about changing and becoming more religious in this way. And I won't get into the details of what he said, but he gave me some details, and I said, you know what, you can do that. But based on what you've told me so far, I think what's going to be most helpful for you is getting a better understanding about where you're at now with your current belief system. I don't think changing your belief system just for the sake of changing the belief system is going to necessarily alleviate your fears. Let's talk about it from where you are now, and let's, in terms of your current belief system, and let's talk, and then let's see if we can get you either with some group that you may select who may help you with turning within, or if you want me to, that's your choice. I don't push it on people, so you know I'm available to help people. So either find something that works for them, or I can teach them myself. So that it was interesting because I actually saw that he was using this possible option of changing his belief system just to change his belief system, even though he didn't really believe in that, you know, mm-hmm. as a way to try to get himself out of this fear cycle.
That if he could change the external belief system, that might take away the internal fear he had.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that changing our belief systems per se does not have an effect from an external to an internal standpoint. But I'm an inside out guy. I'm a work from the inside standpoint, and then we'll have a much more powerful effect outside if we're more powerful and settled and centered inside.
And I know, Calvin, I wanted to ask you, too. I know that you did a presentation, as you mentioned, for a healthcare staff, and I guess that it was at a was it a home care agency?
Yeah, that particular one was a home healthcare agency.
Healthcare. And yeah. I'm just curious about what kind of reception you've found when you speak to healthcare workers.
Yeah, they really found it very valuable. When I do those presentations, I give out a feedback questionnaire afterwards, and I always ask people beforehand, you know, to rank themselves on a scale of 1 to 10, where are they on the kind of fear self-assessment of their own fear about death, and afterwards we got 97% positive results back from all the people who were, you know, the 150 people or so who were there at the session, and some really great comments from folks. They very much found it a valuable in-service for them. Not because some people are looking at it from their own personal perspective, obviously, their own personal fear of death and dying. Other people don't. You know, there's always a handful of people who don't have a fear about death or dying, which is great. But for them, it's valuable because they get to learn about other perspectives about death, beliefs about death and dying that can help them as a professional healthcare worker, you know, with others.
I think that's the perfect way to state it, that those of us who work in any aspect of healthcare ultimately will confront this fear of death in patients, but if we are carrying our own fear of death, that can interfere with how well we can relate to patients and how well we can go on that journey and help them. So I think it's really important to have those various perspectives about the fear, and I find it refreshing to hear about it from someone who's a little bit outside the whole arena of providing that care, to have your point of view, which it's really a big picture view, and you
right.
have this advantage of all this exposure to people from other cultures and countries and belief systems around the world that to share. I just find your approach very wise and very informative.
I appreciate that, Karen. Yeah. I mean, living in 6 countries and then now getting contacted from probably, I don't know, between 15 and 20 different countries, have people from different countries, 15 to 20 different countries have contacted me in the last year or so. you really get a sense for the world, and you get a sense for how similar we are as human beings around the world, notwithstanding the many differences that we have culturally, religious-wise, and personality-wise, and so forth. But how similar we are in certain really, really fundamental, basic ways. And you can't get much more fundamental and basic than this thinking about your own mortality, your own life and death, regardless of what your belief system is.
Mm-hmm. You know? And in this day and age right now, where we're just facing so much polarization in our own society, but
right.
But also around the world, you know, a polarization and feeling alienated from and suspicious of others, I think it's soothing to me to know that there is such a basic commonality between all of us, and death is the one thing that can pull us all together and unite us, no matter what, no matter where else we stand on any other issue or where we're from. Death is the one thing that could bring
yep.
us all together.
Yep, and it's guaranteed that it's going to happen. What's not guaranteed is how we're going to deal with it, and how we each deal with it, and how we each manage it as we approach it, and how we help others who are approaching it. But I'm a big believer in taking approaches that are the least confrontational when it comes to things so essential, so at our essence as death is. It's the ultimate humanity, in a sense, in all of us, and we should access that, each of us as individuals, as best we can. So that's why I've structured things the way I have in terms of the four belief systems and the way I talk about them, the examples, the stories that I give in my lectures about people who are in each of the different belief systems, and stories about their lives and stories about experiences that they've had, and so forth, that elucidate and illustrate each of those four different belief systems and how they've managed to basically reduce their fear and eliminate it, in many cases, completely, their fear of death. I mean, I also get into the related fears. People may wonder, well, what about the fear of pain and suffering? What about the process of dying, in other words? And what about the fear of punishment? And what about the fear of the lack of being able to support a loved one when that loved one, that feeling of helplessness almost, when a loved one is slipping away? Those are fears that many, many, many people are walking around with as well. They're not the fear of death, however, but they are very related fears. And the fear of eternity. You know, even people who believe in reincarnation, okay, they don't have the fear of death because they don't believe in dying, and that the mind dies, even though the body dies, but they could still have the fear of eternity, the fear of what I call the fear of eternity. In other words, the fear of, well, what if I mess up? What if I... a hundred lifetimes from now, I come back as a whatever, and I just have a terrible life. You know, how can I deal with that? And so I talk about with those types of fears. I talk about how can we deal with that now, in order to set ourselves up for the future, regardless, because we don't know what the future brings. Nobody does. The future is uncertain for everybody. There's always the unknown. Nothing is predetermined, I don't think. I think free will operates all the time. We make choices, and we want to make better choices. We want to make choices that are more supportive for each of us as human beings, as individuals, and that's what I think we need to spend our time on, is figuring out in the here and now, how can we prepare ourselves now. And therefore, that fear of the future however we want to articulate it, will dissipate.
Mm-hmm. And as I read, you wrote about in the foreword of your book, I think it was, that the more we can overcome fear, the more fully we can live in the here and now, which is what makes life rich and meaningful for us. And perhaps one of our fears associated with death is that we will die without ever really having lived. And overcoming our fear is what can help us really live right now.
Exactly. Exactly. It's about living now. It's about living fully now as much as we can. All there is the continual present. You know, the past is past and the future hasn't happened yet. And so we need to focus and be in the continual present. I mean, people say live here now, be in the moment, live in the present. And those are all good sayings. They're good admonitions. But how do you do that? How do you get from point A to point B? It's easy to say that, but how do you do that? So that's what my work is focused on, is trying to give people tidbits of practice, tidbits of ways of thinking, tidbits of ways to understand better, and in doing so, help us be more in the present.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you use the word tidbits, because given that this journey of facing up to our fear and the challenge of fear in our own lives is so individual and unique for each one of us, that's really the best that we can do to help someone else, is just offering them the tidbits of wisdom that we've each gathered and know that, you know, we've put it out there for others, and hopefully they can pick up what resonates with them and what's helpful to them on their journey as they're facing
exactly.
up to fear.
Exactly. Everybody has his or her own journey, and that person, I firmly believe, is the best person to know what that person, what's appropriate for that person at that particular time. Now, that person, sometimes mind is cloudy about that and foggy. Mm-hmm. And so forth. But ultimately, that's the person who needs to make that decision in terms of what is helpful and useful and valuable information for that person, not me. So I offer the information, and like you say, there are tidbits of information that can be taken or not taken, and or maybe taken and then shelved for a while, and then later it becomes useful for the person. So I think that the bottom line is, to your point, I think, is a sharing of information as much as we can with each other about death and dying. We need to talk about it more. We need to share ideas with others. I say this right at the beginning of my lectures. I say the first thing, objective I want to try to accomplish here with everybody is to feel a little bit more comfortable to just talk about this with our friends and our loved ones and so forth. And this is something that culturally we don't do. We do a terrible job at that. And that's one of the underlying objectives, I think, of our foundation, is to try to encourage more conversation. Because out of that conversation, people are going to get more comfortable with death and dying right at the outset, just by getting it off their chest and talking about it with people, even if they don't fully have an understanding about it, because, again, nobody really will until they do die. But it will help relieve the pressure. It's kind of like a pressure valve. We want to relieve the pressure valve so that people can be in the moment and live more fully. Come up with the latest desalination process that will fix the water problem in the world that's cost effective. I mean, free up that energy for useful things, in other words. You know, that
exactly.
People come up with all kinds of amazing cures for this illness and that illness. But we need to free up that energy, because so many amazing minds are walking around with wasting that energy. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken with who are 20 to 30 years old, who've called me from around the world. They're debilitated by this fear of death, and you can tell by how they articulate to me, sometimes in broken English. But you can tell how bright the mind is. You can just feel how you know, the energy from that from that person. You can just feel their energy, their soul, their awareness, their consciousness is just very, very, very powerful and strong. And yet it is being diverted by this fear that they have. So if I can incrementally help free that energy up in people, then even if it's 10% by 10% or 20%, free it up. It's a huge, you know, the positive impact on that in the world community, obviously individually starting with that person, but in the world community, because the impact that person can have be huge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so true. And I think that goal, that mission that you have is something every one of us can share with you, is how do we together collectively help reduce this burden of fear that possesses us as humankind, the fear of death? How can we reduce it within ourselves and help others around us reduce their own fear so we can just be here and utilize this amazing energy we have, as you said, to solve the problems that we really need to be working on.
Yeah, and just to enjoy life, really, mm-hmm. You know? I mean, I think that's ultimately the pursuit of happiness, enjoying life, however that is for an individual. As long as they're not harming other people, then I'm a big believer in you know, whatever you want to do, that's fine, you know? I want to create a movement worldwide that empowers each individual to start their own thinking process, their own groups, their own discussion in their living room and so forth around death and dying, to help people feel more comfortable with death and dying through their own lenses, whatever they are. And that's my ultimate goal. That's my objective. You know.
So, Kelvin, if anyone listening should want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to connect with you? Is it through your website?
I think probably through the website. Yeah, overcomingthefearofdeath.org. It's just spelled all out. Overcomingthefearofdeath.org. And, of course, it's a .org because it's a nonprofit organization. And then there's a contact page there, and they can send me an email, and then we can connect via email or phone that way.
So even if someone's interested in inviting you to be a speaker for their organization, or if they wanted to schedule a one-hour telephone session with you, they'd contact
right.
you through that same forum.
Exactly.
On
exactly,
okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's also where everyone can sign up to get notified about your book. But you also have a number of
right.
videos. And I watched the video mm-hmm. of the news presentation from China.
China, yeah.
That was just amazing. You were telling me that news, or you had written that news show has 100 million viewers.
Right.
And so it's just incredible how this message of overcoming the fear of death is so captivating worldwide. So
yeah and the videos, like you say, there's a number of videos there that are available for people for free to watch, lectures that I've given, and some are some are a couple hours long, some are an hour long, 40 minutes long, some are just short segments out of some lectures that I gave, 2 or 3 minutes here and there. So there's a whole bunch of videos that people can access. And there's also some essays that I've written on various topics, that some of which are related to specifically overcoming the fear of death. And some of the topics of the essays that I've written are just on how to live life more fully and more freely and without fear and restriction, et cetera.
Hmm. Well, I encourage our listeners to go to overcomingthefearofdeath.org, check out the website, and learn even more about Kelvin and his work. And Kelvin, I just want to thank you for taking time out to join me today for this conversation.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for having me on, Karen. Really appreciate it.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Kelvin Chin. Personally, I found it fascinating, and Kelvin really gave me a lot to think about. The fact that I'm aware of the fear of death in our society, but I had never thought of breaking it down into different types of beliefs about death, and really recognizing that our fear may be arising from different places based on our beliefs. So I want to give you just my main takeaways from Kelvin's talk. Just as something you can grab a hold of and hopefully take with you too. So first of all, the four categories that Kelvin identifies as the four belief systems that contribute to our fear of death. So the first belief system is believing that when the body dies, the mind dies, or consciousness dies, or the soul dies, that there's nothing else after death. The second belief system, believing that the body dies, but the mind or the soul continues, and having a lot of fear attached to that, fear about what happens to the soul or to consciousness after death. The third belief system is that the body dies, the mind or consciousness continues and transitions to something, but there's not fear attached to it as there is with the second belief system. And then the fourth belief system, that the mind continues, consciousness continues after bodily death and transitions to another state and may even decide to come back in another lifetime as a reincarnated being. And as Kelvin pointed out, those four different belief systems are actually present in any religion. And so it's actually more helpful to divide up those belief systems and to look at people's beliefs through his formatting than to attribute beliefs to a particular religion, because people could be part of any religion and still have different beliefs about death and dying, continuation after death, and whether or not there's an afterlife. So I found that really helpful, a really helpful distinction to make. Kelvin said that through his work with working with people all over the world who contact him for free counseling, and as he mentioned, he spends an hour on the phone with people usually who need to talk about their fear of death. And that's where he learned about these four belief systems. But also what he discovered is that there is this common thread throughout all societies, all religions, all political and ethnic groups. The idea that we struggle with death and trying to make sense of it, trying to understand it, and trying to get around our fear of death. Let's see. So he found it very informative, learning from people from other parts of the world and discovering this similarity that we all share, and that it's kind of nice to focus on what makes us similar to other people, what binds us together, instead of the ways in which we're different. Then Kelvin also said that he focuses on inner change first rather than trying to change our external beliefs. So he encourages people not to try to change their minds about what they think or what they believe. He encourages them to work on fear within themselves using prayer or meditation or contemplation, some sort of an inner process of going within, getting calm, listening to, you know, the higher self, whatever that is, and finding inner wisdom and inner peace within as the best way of dealing with fear, rather than trying to change the belief system. And that sometimes a person's belief system does change as a result of doing inner work, but he himself doesn't try to change the belief for another person. And I really enjoyed his stories about listening and then sometimes also pointing out incongruencies in a person's beliefs. Like you believe that there's no continuation after you die, that consciousness does not go on, and yet you're afraid. And so I really liked that approach of his, of simply pointing out, like, how do those two things fit together? Because if you don't go on, you won't even know what happened. So what is to be afraid of? And I really liked that he said his approach was to identify the real source of fear that might be underlying the kind of the mind's preoccupation or worry about death. So I found that really, really useful. Also that Kelvin has observed through surveys that the surveys of the audiences that he speaks to, that there is in 97% of the cases a decrease in the fear of death in the people who attend and listen to his talk. And so I think that's something really useful, a useful takeaway for all of us, that if we spend our time educating people and doing our best in whatever way we can to talk about death, to help bring fears out into the open and help people face their fears, it does make a difference. And Kelvin, in his own way, is demonstrating that with the talks that he's been giving. So I think that should empower all of us. It's worth it to put a little time and effort into maybe teaching a class, maybe doing a talk for some group that we belong to, just speaking up, talking about death and dying, and helping to bring fear to the surface so that we can look at it and so that we can begin to work on that. So let's see, Kelvin also mentioned, and this was kind of fun, that he really believes that we waste a lot of our mental energy and creativity on ruminating about fear of death. And if we can help people move beyond that, there's so many more problems we need to fix. If we can move beyond that fear, we can unleash lots and lots of creative energy for productivity that can help make the world a better place. And so I wholeheartedly agree with that. So those are my main takeaways from Kelvin's talk today, and I hope you enjoyed it also. Keep some of these ideas in mind. Remember that, you know, work on your own fear of death, but help those around you to get more comfortable talking and thinking about death. It will pay off for all of us in the end when we do work on that. So I want to thank you so much for joining me here for this episode of the podcast. Remember, there's a new episode every Monday, so tune in next week to hear whatever the conversation's going to be next time around. And also, you can go to the show notes at eolupodcast.com if you want to find any links there for Kelvin's book or for his website, overcomingthefearofdeath.org. I'll put those on the show notes for today's episode. And you can also find a link to learn how to leave a review on iTunes, which is greatly appreciated if you're willing to do that, if you enjoy the content, because every review that gets left on iTunes helps someone else find the podcast. iTunes ranks the podcast a little higher, and they're more likely to recommend it to someone else who's searching for just this kind of content. So thanks in advance for taking the time to leave a review if you decide to do that. So I will see you next week, and until that time, be well. Remember to face your fears, just like Kelvin and I talked about today. Be ready for whatever life might bring your way, and love your life. Love every minute of it, and appreciate what you have while you're here. So until next week, take care and goodbye.